This episode is brought to you by Fat Expats. It's the new expat magazine that's coming your way next month. If you'd like to find out more about it, head over to twofatexpats.com. You'll see a pop-up and you can sign up and we'll shoot you some information. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
Oh, that's better, Kirsty Rice, isn't it? I'm fine, thank you. Back to normal, back to the correct order of things. Kirsty Rice, this is episode 153.
Wow.
I just want to, because we celebrated our 100th episode, and the other day I thought, I wonder how many more we've done since then. So I went and had a quick count on the social.
I'd like to know how many of those 153 were actually done on the day that they were meant to be done, on the time they were meant to be done.
Well, once we earn the big bucks and someone pays us to do it, we can stick to a schedule.
Oh, dear Nikki, I have had a very exciting phone call today from my second child who was very excited, and anyone with kids would know that amazing feeling when your child rings with news and it's exciting news and you can hear that it is just the best thing that's ever happened. And that is because of COVID, the Adelaide University, and I think quite a few universities, have offered for our year 12s to submit their year 11 results and then gain a university entrance based on the year 11 results, and she has been accepted into university.
That is so exciting.
It is.
Super exciting. Well done to Annie. That's super exciting.
It is. Okay, Nikki Moffat, four fat questions. Here we go. So I need you to explain something to me. We're now getting to the end of G's treatment, hopefully, fingers crossed, everybody touch a big fat piece of wood. I mean, he may need surgery, but we'll know more next month. But he's had the chemo and the radio and the low-dose chemo, et cetera. So when I tell our local friends here that G may possibly be returning to work in the next couple of months, they kind of tilt their heads, kind of like Labrador's questioning sort of why so soon. Like a few people have said, you know, does he have to go back to work? And I am just so confused by this sort of line of questioning. I mean, do other people have money trees in their backyards that just allow them to never go back to work? Or perhaps do people think that we have one in our backyard that we don't need people to go back to work? Like what? Why would anyone think he wouldn't be going back?
Well, good question. So there's so many questions in today's world, Kirsty. Look, I think it's the expat thing again, right? So if he was living in the same country and right now as he works in, he's in Australia having treatment right now. If he was working in Australia and he was just going back to the office sort of, you know, that's 30 minutes away drive, no one would say, oh, you know, does he have to so soon? They'd be like, oh, yeah, okay. I know all these other people who've been through the same process, had time off work. And, but I think that's definitely part of it, that you live in one country and they're like, oh, why would you go to another country now? I think that the COVID thing, the COVID that has really changed people's mindset as well, because people are now used to everyone just being together all the time. And if you're working, you work from home, and people don't have to go to offices and leave their families, and there's so much more flexibility, and then there's just this really not normalcy in terms of what we've had for the last 2,000 years on Earth. We haven't had, well, no, since 1918, we haven't had this kind of situation where there's this massive disruption. And I think when we've had this massive disruption in everyone's lives, people have just changed their mindset. And so when you say, oh, he's going to go back to work, and work means Qatar and means another country, and now it's hard in Australia to get out and get in, you know, people say, well, why would he have to do that? You know, they don't think about the other side of it. They just think about if they were doing it from the logistical side, how would all that work? I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Unless if you do have a money tree, I want to come around and have a go.
I just, it just blows me away because I think, well, how do you think we're going to pay the mortgage? And you know, I keep thinking about our house in Qatar that we left in such a massive, you know, mad rush. And I think about stupid things like the earrings that I took off the night before and left on the bedside table that are still sitting there, you know, of all the things that are probably just sitting out thinking that I'd be back in a month, you know, that this was all just a very temporary thing. And I've been here now, what are we? We're in September, I left in March. But I think it just blows me away that people just think we don't have to go back. Of course we have to go back. You know, that's our life, our jobs, our world.
They've also got used to you the being idea there. I mean, 6 months, you've both been there for 6 months. And
true,
you know, they've got used to seeing you. They've got used to seeing you guys together. They've got used to seeing you at the beach on your walks. And so they don't like the idea or feel comfortable with the idea that something else is going to change in their world. I imagine that's part of it as well.
Miss Greg. Yes. Well, maybe they'll enjoy seeing us, you know, homeless because we can't pay the mortgage. Or
I don't think that anyone would enjoy that at all, Kirsty. Okay. My question for you: how far ahead should you plan for post school with your expat child? So, given that you might not know what country you'll be living in or moving to, this is a question. If you have a child that's older than 18 and post school, and they might not move out straight away, do you move them with you or what happens? And can you move them with you?
Now, you asked this question in the group, and I have to admit, I didn't look at all the answers. What sort of answers did you get from the group?
Well, a lot of people wrote COVID-related answers. So, you know, like my child came to visit at the start of COVID and they're still here 6 months later, you know.
Yeah.
And we've been able to get bridging visas because a lot of countries have been very accommodating on people that were in place at the time. But there were some people that responded, I guess, in the vein that I asked the question, which was, for example, my son is finishing school this year and we're moving country. So if we moved, he would no longer be at school and he's over 18. So does he qualify as part of us and as part of our family? And can he get a visa, which was the situation? So someone said in Singapore, they can have a visa up to 21, a student visa up to 21, but it's not part of the family visa. So it's all these separate kind of, this is when you run into visa situations and where people can and can't be with you. Someone else wrote that I just saw the post this morning, they're in Switzerland and now their son comes to visit them from university and is staying with them for a while. And that's fine because when he comes, he can see all his school friends because that's where he finished school. But should they move to a new country, when he came and if he ever came to live with them, he wouldn't have any friends there. So he'd be in a different situation altogether. So I guess I just wanted to bring to the front that I guess this is another thing that COVID has made me think about, that, you know, people that are thinking about gap years or that kind of stuff, say something happens this year and my son doesn't go to university next year go straight onto some further education of some kind, not necessarily university, but take a different path, what happens then? Can he move with us to Denmark? Can he come for a year while we try and help, you know, work through some things together? You know, the original plan was for him to go to Australia for a gap year and spend time with different family members in different states, but you can't even get between states very easily these days in Australia. So, you know, that wouldn't really even be an option. So there's just all this sort of up in the air stuff, and it just made me really think that how people deal with this, and particularly people with, you know, children who are, while we're pretty confident my son will go on to live an independent life, but children who grow up and don't go on to live independent lives, you know, where their family has to care for them, how does that go? How does that go with moving to different countries, and how does that all work out? Like, it's just, just something that came up. Bigger kids, bigger problems.
How many people, Nikki, in your travels have you met with an adult whose child is living with them?
Yeah, not many, hardly any. I can't think of any off the top of my head. I can think of ones that come and visit and spend sort of extended periods of time, but I can't think of any that stay.
Yeah.
But I just think with my son particularly, I don't see, like, he could go somewhere and it could be a disaster and he could have to come back. You know, like, I just can see all different scenarios that are playing out that in my mind when I lay awake at night and think about it, that, and I wonder, you know, how it's like, yeah, I mean, that doesn't happen very often, but there must be situations where it does happen. So I was just interested in how often it happened and how it worked out. So, you know, people talked about situations where that came up.
Yeah, it did make me think about how many times I returned to my parents' house as an adult, you know, because I had parents that lived in the country. And you think, well, for expat kids, it's not really a possibility. Now, I have to say, when I was in Qatar, I did see people that, who had left Denmark and left a child behind. You quite often hear of that, where someone will say, our child did year 12 and we left them there because they're at university and they're doing, you know, university there. Or we did see people with adult children who came and lived and worked in Qatar, but they were their own expats, right, by that stage, because they had their own jobs and they'd got their own gigs. But it does raise a really interesting question about having other dependents and what happens, because I don't know a lot of expats with special needs adults who live with them. And I was thinking, you know, I've met a lot of people with kids with special needs, couples I've met who have had kids with extreme special needs, and they have been able to hire staff and have help and, you know, have jobs and do that. And it's never occurred to me, foolishly, of, well, what's going to happen when those children, you know, get to become adults? And are you going to have to go home because you won't, you know, you won't have those dependency, you know, being able to offer, you know, the same dependency visas? It's an excellent question that you've raised, because you don't hear people talk about it. It's one of those things.
Yeah, and I guess a lot of people that regularly, you know, like, a lot of people don't opt, if they have children already in that situation, they opt not to go, not to live that life, or, you know, there are reasons why you see less people doing it in the first place. But then there's someone like us and my son, who is, you know, it might just take him a little bit longer to launch, to get his wings out and fly away. And I keep preparing my husband for that, you know. And I mean, when I left university in the early 90s, and I didn't get a job. I went home for six, 8 months. I mean, I worked at home, but I lived at home, and, you know, worked for my parents and sort of just hung out in town and, you know, went away. And, but so, like, that just that being there, that your parents are there and that's a safe place you can go. And, you know, just exactly like what you said, it's a scary thought. I guess, see, you've already got launched children. I don't have any launched children
but not
yet,
so. Launched enough, Nikki, not launched enough, because, you know, my adult child lives in a, you know, what we call a unit, what others might call an apartment in the city. Well, I own that apartment that she lives in, that she pays rent, do you know? So she's not fully launched. She's just, like she always says,
but she's paying you rent.
Yeah, she calls herself a little pretend adult. But what we don't think about, because we all have these children and we have these ideas in our minds about what they're going to grow into and what that life's going to look like and whatever. And I have, very many times I've thought of, you know, well, what if we move to Singapore and none of our children will have ever lived there, and it will be so strange for them to come and visit us because they won't be coming back to their family home and they will have never lived there. It never once crossed my mind, what if I move to Singapore and one of my children says, I want to come and live with you full time as an adult?
Yeah.
Do you know? It's never. Now, why hasn't that crossed my mind? I mean, I don't know
why.
Yes.
Just thought I'd bring it up. Put something else on your list, Kirsty.
Because you,
next question,
yeah, maybe. It's silly because we all have these, you know, preconceived ideas. You will go to university, then you will maybe travel, and then you will maybe do this, and then you'll get a job, and maybe you'll meet someone and whatever. But you don't in your mind go, and then you'll ring me up and say, I'm going to come back and live with you. I'm 27, but I'd love to live with you. Okay. All right. My next question. This is a very self-indulgent question, but it is front and center of mind. Yesterday, a G got a phone call and I walked outside after he'd hung up and he just looked gutted. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, he's had terrible, terrible health news, but he was really gutted. And then I said, who are you on the phone to? And he said, our friend Chip. And he just looked at me and said, they're leaving. And he was absolutely devastated. Now, as was I, because Chip is married to a very lovely woman called Laura, who has been my friend, I think, for the whole time I've been in Doha. But this is the third friend, Nikki, in about the space of 2 months. And all of them are kind of COVID related of different situations that have happened. But
yeah.
But they're off. And I just, you know, G and I sat there kind of, first of all, speechless and staring out over the front yard, just staring at the dog basically. And then we went into this familiar conversation that I've heard us have over and over again of, you know, we'll be able to see them in, you know, such and such, and that'll be fine because we'll be able to visit them here and da 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 da. But I was thinking, how many goodbyes, Nikki, before your heart just turns to stone completely? And, you know, obviously, stating the obvious, COVID just makes this all so much harder.
Yeah, I think it's so hard. I also think it's hilarious that you're sitting after spending 6 months in Australia being gutted that someone's leaving another country that you're not living in right now.
And that's it, isn't it? It's that I know they're not going to be there. Do you know
when I've you go missed... back? Like, I yeah. want them to be there when I go back, yet your return is up in the air. So yes, do you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
It's just, it's that whole,
absolutely.
It's so difficult. But I think I understand how you feel about that. But I think that someone in Australia who you told that to would say, well, you're not even there. Like, you haven't seen them for the last 6 months. Like, you'll be okay. Because this special, special bond that expats have when they meet each other in different countries, deep, hard, fast bond that expats have and that they form so quickly, and that it's like falling in love so hard. And it's just you and these people, just it never even goes away. Even if you sort of stay for a long time in a country and you don't see each other as often, they're always the people that you fell hard for and cared so much about at one stage. And so they're always got this special place with you. And so, you know, and it's why you think 20 years after you've seen someone, you can pick up with where you left off, which is so bizarre. Yet for an expat, you feel that is entirely possible.
Yeah.
That you just pick up and talk like you just saw each other yesterday. And that's why I think it's so hard. And, you know, I went to a birthday lunch yesterday of someone who's leaving at the end of the year. She's going to Porto. And I was just so excited for it. She's a friend. I don't see her all the time, but I was just like super excited for her. But there were other people at the table who were saying, oh, you know, we'll really miss you and it's really hard. I was like, you're going to Portugal, dude. It's sunshine. Like, sport and the ocean and, you know, and you can come here whenever you want. Like, it's not super far. And so a bit, but we
but
know
you
people
did,
don't
but you obviously, back. Yeah, and you obviously didn't have that investment. Like, for you to say, yeah, but you can come back here whenever you want. Well, you're not going to be there. You're going to be in Denmark.
Yeah, that's right. But I was talking about for the friends who are really upset. And I was more thinking, you know, isn't it an opportunity to go there? Now you know someone in Porto. Hello, when did you, so, but I was doing that because they were not my deep heartfelt friends like you're talking about with you. And so, but the people at the table who had that were feeling that process.
Yeah.
And they were, and I mean, everyone's done it and everyone's felt it.
Because they know that it's never, never going to be the same. Because they will come back and visit, but there'll never be that comfort. They won't have their car. They won't have their house. They won't have their life. They won't have maybe their kids and your kids or their partner and whatever. When they come back, they'll come back for, you know, maybe the Christmas markets if only they were on. Really? But if they would come back for one of those visits where it was the catch-up visit. It's never the deep conversation that you just had when you were sitting around having a coffee on a Sunday morning. And it is, you know, the two girlfriends that I've lost are my two friends that came with me for chemo.
Oh, and that is hard.
And I'm just thinking, I'm going to go back and there will be no sign of your existence at all. Like, you've gone. And that is that whole thing, you know, when you, those expat goodbyes, when you say goodbye to someone and you think, I know that I will never live in the same country as you again. Do you know, I remember that with my girlfriend Leah when we left Houston. And I had lived in we'd both lived in Jakarta, we both lived in Houston, but I knew that was it now. There wasn't going to be. She wasn't leaving Houston and we weren't going back to Houston. And so you go, we'll never have that random phone call of, hey, where are you? I'm just down the road. You know, let's grab lunch. Let's do whatever. It'll never be the same. But, yes, and I don't know, it does, I think it just makes you so hard because you're just constantly doing this. You know, I've been doing this for 20 years and I think it just has made me very tough.
Yeah. So but you're still very sad. Mm. So it hasn't made you that tough.
Yes. That's true. I need to get tough.
Okay, Kirsty. On a lighter note, what languages did your kids learn at school and why did they learn them? That was it because of the country you were in, and are they different than your kids' languages your kids would have learnt if you'd been in your home country? Now, the reason completely. I ask this is because my high school German teacher, this week is my daughter's birthday, and for her birthday she has had one wish granted, which is to have her hair colored. And so I put and I'm never allowed to take photos of her anymore because it's too embarrassing to have a photo taken by your mother when you're a teenager. But I was allowed to take a photo and I put it on Facebook to share because she can't see it there. So that's all good. Anyway, my high school German teacher said to me, oh, my goodness, she looks really like you looked at the same age, except we never would have been allowed to have blue hair at the school I went to. And I laughed and I said to my work colleague, oh, my German teacher, she said, German? Why is your German so bad if you learned it at school? And I said, dude, I learned it at school. Like, she said, but why would you learn a language if you weren't going to work in that language? Like, why didn't you keep it up? And I was thinking, you're an Italian. And you live in a close proximity to all these other languages and you learn them for a reason, whereas when we're at school in Australia and they tell you when you're 11 to pick a language, you don't. You're not really thinking like that. But whereas when you grow up.
At 11, you're not going, well, I really want it to be easier to order a cafe latte on the Champs Elysees.
Because she also said, then why did you learn German in Australia when it's so far away? And I said, well, it's much more sensible these days. Schools teach things like Indonesian and Mandarin. And she said, why would you learn Indonesian?
Mm-hmm.
I said, because something like 50 or 60% of Australians go on holiday to Indonesia sort of three or more times in their lifetime. Why would you learn it to go on a holiday? You know, why don't you learn it to work in it? And I was thinking, everything you're saying makes perfect sense, but from my point of view, it's totally different. So it just made me then think about why how and why and what languages your kids learn. So, Kirsty, run us through it.
And you're right, Australians do. Like, I think when our parents were at school, they would have done, God, they would have done Latin, but then they would have done, you know, French, German. What else? Would they have been offered anything else other than French and German? I don't think so. No.
I think it was just based on purely a British school system. They learned French and German and Latin.
And then somewhere along the line, I think maybe in the 90s, the Australian education system got a little bit smarter about who their neighbours were and who they were doing business with. So they were definitely thinking about it work-wise, but they were thinking Mandarin, Cantonese, Indonesian, etc. So for us, we were in Canada when my first was at school, and we all went to the Calgary French International School, and so everyone did a bit of French. Four children under the age of six, doing French homework, I am not a French speaker, was an absolute nightmare, and still burns a searing pain into, you know, in between my eyes when I think about trying to do just basic homework. And so because of that, I have complete lock on that time would not be wasted, you know, that we would continue on with French because we'd been through this pain. So my eldest, because she's such a great little pleaser, she has really stuck to it. So she did the IB, she did high level French in year 12. She now is doing French at university. It's one of her favorite subjects. She's, you know, completely fluent, and she has bizarrely surrounded herself with other French speakers as well. So I don't think it's going anywhere. My second child ran screaming from French and then got herself, you know, into a system where she didn't have to do the language at all. My third child desperately wanted to do Spanish, but oh no, you know, mummy knows best. She really made sure he was going to do French, and he is now doing IB Spanish because he really wanted to do Spanish. And, you know, hey, funny, look at that. He's actually really good at it because he really wants to do it and he really likes it. And then I think my fourth, same thing, kicking and screaming, just doesn't want to do French at all. My thinking behind it was, you know, international language when it came to the Olympics and
I see where you went. You were going there.
Yeah.
It's the third most spoken language. Was the third most spoken language. I think the orders have changed now.
Yes. And it's all just such a personal thing because I would dearly love to be able to speak French and I can't. But you're right, Nikki. We don't with our kids think about it in a work form, do we? Whereas I guess Europeans really do. They think about you know, what it's going to do, not so much the love of the language.
Yeah. Well, so my kids both went to Mandarin immersion preschool and I was like, yes, this is awesome. We're Australians living in Hong Kong and I'm not even doing anything and they're getting the Mandarin.
Yes.
And then we moved to South Africa and they had to learn Afrikaans and Zulu at school. Like they had to learn it, which I think is great. If you're South African, if you're Australian, it's not super great.
Yeah.
Not hugely useful. Then we went to the US and they don't do languages in primary school, except then I enrolled my daughter into this school. I said, look, you did a Mandarin immersion preschool, so I'm going to put you back in a school and do Mandarin immersion primary school.
Right.
Which lasted a year. And then we moved to Germany, which she was horrified about. Why didn't you put me in the German stream? Why did you put me in the Mandarin stream? Didn't know we were moving to Germany. So, and then this is one of my daughter's big issues about moving to Denmark. She doesn't want to learn Danish.
Yeah.
She just doesn't want to learn another language. And in the international school system, when you live in the country, you have to learn the language, which is fair. It's fair if you live in a country, you should learn that language.
Absolutely.
I'm not denying that. But I can see that she's spent all these years learning all these ridiculous other languages. Having said that, she chose Spanish last year. So this is her, two years ago. This is her third year of Spanish. She really loves it. She loves it more than German. And she's apparently reasonable at it as well. So hopefully she'll keep her Spanish up. But yeah, I just thought it was so interesting that my work colleague was saying to me, why would you learn a language if you're not going to use it? Like, you know.
But I mean, like, I remember when I was looking at doing French immersion for the kids, I remember my English teacher saying to me, oh, it's brilliant because it's a proven fact that if kids learn more than one language at that age, they just absorb so much more and their learning style is so much better because they're so much flexible with their brains and the left and the right and the da 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 da. And I mean, you see it with immersion, don't you? You see them being able to float in and out of two languages so simply. There's no embarrassment about getting the word wrong or any of that. So I don't know, maybe you should say to your friend, well, it's not always just about language for work. It's about language for love.
I know.
Yes.
But I can see that she really thought about it that way.
Yes.
And, you know, in Europe, they do start English very young and they start it, I guess, and that's part of the sell process. You don't learn English.
You won't get a job.
End. Yeah.
So last week when we were talking about our four fat things, I told you that I had failed spectacularly at updating my LinkedIn profile. So you can imagine this morning when I woke up and thought, oh, God, I still haven't done it. So guess what I've been doing this morning? I've been updating my LinkedIn profile. And I have.
I'll have to go check it out.
Hooray. It's nowhere near finished, but I have in there, I've put the latest job in there. I've said what I've done in the latest job. I've, you know, flicked all the little buttons to say, you know, what extra skills, all that sort of stuff. I reckon I'm actually going to go and get a professional pick done. I think it's about time. I think my last pick was in 2016. So it's probably time to go and.
That's 2016. Yeah. I think mine's before that. But I should get one done. I just don't want to see all the new wrinkles on my face.
But I have to say, I am loving being held accountable to do something, like saying it out loud that we're going to do it. And I did hear a Confucius quote today that all people are the same. It's only their habits that differ. And I thought, oh, yeah. And I,
that's so true.
Yep. If you can just get into those habits of, you know, okay, I'm going to get up at this time, or I'm going to do 30 minutes of exercise, or I'm going to do my LinkedIn profile, or I'm going to do whatever. Now, I can't remember. What was your four fat things last?
I was finishing my attic runs to the garbage areas, and I still have one to go, so I'm gonna pull that forward into the next week, but I'm gonna stay accountable, so I'll come back and update you on that.
Okay.
As to what's coming for this week, don't have a plan.
All right. I'm gonna go and find someone to do my professional pick so I can update all my socials and do all of that. I have definitely got into the habit of doing more Insta and, you know, more updates.
Yes.
Have you noticed that, Nikki? I've got much better at doing that.
I have noticed a little bit. Yeah, you're appearing a little bit more in my algo. You've got to work your way back into my algorithm, though.
Look how desperately I'm seeking your affection and your acknowledgement. Have you noticed, Nikki? Have you noticed? I'm really trying really hard. Nikki, just speaking of Insta, we have a listener, Nairi Cox, who is based in Saudi, and she has this fantastic Insta page.
I love her Insta page and her stories. Yes, fabulous.
Yes. And one of the things Nairi suggested this week, because, you know, I was talking last week about authenticity and that I'm keen on how to stay authentic and basically not give a toss what other people think, but also being a good example to my kids of how to live an authentic life. And the lovely Nairi said, hey, you should read The Authenticity Project by Claire Poole. So I've downloaded it. Have you heard about it, Nikki?
I have not, but I'm feeling that I need to maybe get involved here.
Yeah. And I had a quick look, and Claire Poole is a blogger who then started the Authenticity Project. And I noticed since then she's written another book, and she really looks like she might be right up my alley. I'm actually really looking forward to it. So I will put that on my list of reads for this week of what I want to do. And I have signed up, Nikki, to do Ben Crowe's virtual masterclass. Now, I've talked about Ben Crowe with you before and how much I loved. I'd initially heard him on another podcast that I listened to, a sports podcast, and he's the guy who was involved with Ash Barty and responsible for her and the Richmond Tigers, et cetera, et cetera. So this masterclass is all about finding your mojo through self-confidence, and I just thought it kind of stays on that same sort of little trajectory that I'm trying to push myself onto, where, you know, that you can look at your own story and be and feel confident in your own authenticity of who you are. He's got some YouTube clips. It's called Mojo Espresso. And I imagine that the masterclass is going to be a little bit like his YouTube clips.
I am fascinated by this, Kirsty Rice, that you've signed up for an online masterclass. I'm just absolutely beside myself fascinated. So I am.
Me too. I am too. It is so not a Kirsty thing.
It's not a Kirsty thing. It's the anti-Kirsty. I mean,
it is. I am so not woo-woo, and this just feels so woo-woo, doesn't it? And I'm with you because I keep thinking the same thing. I keep reading all these things and doing all these things and thinking, what is going on? But I think it's this, you know, there's a bit going on at our house at the moment. And I think
there's a lot going on at your house. So that's fine. You do whatever you want, Kirsty.
To get through. But I'm a big believer of, you know, greatest growth comes from your darkest times. And this is very much our darkest times in my family. There is a lot going on, and I can't tell other people's stories, but just trust me when I say there is some sadness surrounding me at the moment. But weirdly, within that sadness, I do keep finding the blessings. Do you know that even though this is quite possibly the strangest moment of my life and the darkest time, I am really curious as to what's sort of happening to me internally and what that internal conversation is. And I do think that Ben Crowe might be a good person for me to have around talking to me, because he says things like, are you stuck at home or are you safe at home? And I go, yes, Ben, that's right. I'm safe at home. And he tells you uplifting things like that healthcare came out of the first pandemic. We didn't have organized healthcare before that. And that Social Security came out of the Depression, and that, you know, these good things can come out of terrible times. So I'm just trying to run with, you know, his philosophy, I guess. But yes, Nikki, I don't blame you for being completely fascinated, because it is so not.
I cannot wait. I've diarized it. So I can check in with you, because I saw it that you were going to talk about. I was like, oh, I'm clicking on this link. And then I went and I saw, and there's like a payment and everything. And I was like, oh, I'm in. I need to know what happened after this is over. I'm in.
Hey, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about, and I was really excited about watching this, and so I'm quite surprised by my reaction. So it's 20 years since the Sydney Olympics. Mm. And 20 years since Cathy Freeman won the gold medal in the 400 metres. And it was such a huge, huge momentous part of Australia's history, I guess. Now, Nikki, just before I continue, where were you when the Sydney Olympics were on?
Kirsty, I was at the event when Cathy Freeman won the gold medal.
Well, you are perfect for me to speak to, because you aren't going to be able to answer all my questions. I didn't know that. Did I know someone else was at that event? You might have
my
been
husband.
Sitting near them. Okay. So I watched the Cathy Freeman story on ABC iView. I don't know if you've had a chance to watch
it yet, but I'm going to.
Okay. So it's told in a unique way. It's not, you know, let's sit down and talk to Kathy and, you know, ask her 20 questions. It's very artistically done. There's dancing, there's, you know, a lot of Kathy sitting in a room with, you know, images rolling past her, and she almost sounds like she's reading from her book when she tells you things, because she explains to you what it felt like, how her body felt, what the sensations were, what the crowd did, the whole thing. But I just didn't feel the feels I think I was meant to. And I was actually really disappointed. And I wondered, was it because in 2000 I was in Indonesia? We'd already started our expat life. And I watched it old school, in that there was no, you know, clicking on a link and watching it live on the internet. We were watching it on television in Indonesia, but we had Indonesian commentary and Indonesian bias because we were watching it on local Indonesian TV. So I can remember when the opening ceremony started and they had all these uniquely Australian things happening within the opening ceremony. It was all in Bahasa. And I remember thinking, is that a Kewpie doll? I think I had one of those Kewpie dolls. I wonder what they're saying about the Kewpie dolls. Or, oh, yeah, those horses are from A Man from Snowy River, but I wish someone could kind of really explain to me what the story is, you know, behind this. Like I was just one step kind of removed from the real passion and the feeling of it. And so, yeah, I feel like that's how I felt when I watched it. But I'd be really interested to see whether you jump on the whole, oh, my God, this is amazing because I was there and I remember how Australia felt and whatever.
Well, I mean, yeah. So I worked at the place that hosted the call center for the Sydney Olympic Games.
Right.
So we did the ticketing. So there was a big ballot in Australia and you applied for tickets and then we did all the balloting and the ticketing and everything. So we were already like felt super close to the whole thing because, you know, this whole thing was going on for months beforehand, obviously in the year beforehand. Then in Sydney, like most cities that host Olympics, everyone thought they wanted to get out of town. They didn't want to be there. So the city itself during the work day time was absolutely amazing. I would drive to work in the morning over the Harbour Bridge. There'd be no traffic. It was just unbelievable. And then we didn't get any ballots in the Australian ticketing, but because I had worked in this environment, I said to my aunt and uncle who lived in Canada, I said to my parents, you know, you should contact them and get them to apply for all these tickets that you want to go and see, because they get ballots in Canada. And of course, there's not as many Canadians applying to go to all the same things as there are Australians.
Yeah.
So my Canadian aunt and uncle got us all these amazing tickets, and mostly to the athletics, because it was just impossible to get tickets to the swimming almost. So we went two nights to the athletics, and my Canadian cousin's girlfriend was in the Canadian track team. So we were sitting in the stands and like the whole Canadian track team runs up and says hi, and we're like, oh, hi. So like we were really involved in the whole sort of excitement of it and the feeling, and you know, you caught the train and everyone was standing waiting for the train for hours to get in and out of Homebush, but everyone sang songs and, you know, met the people standing in front of them and behind them and found out where they were from and where they'd traveled from. And it was really the only time I've felt like that since then was when we lived in South Africa during the Soccer World Cup in 2008. And it was amazing. And they had a ballot for the tickets. And so Durban hosted a whole series of games, and I put in a ballot for every game in Durban because I remembered the Sydney Olympic experience. And the Australians were also based in Durban. And we got tickets for every game in Durban, and it wiped us out. But it was so expensive. But we were just so excited to go, and it was the same feeling. The whole country feels like it's a party, and a bit more so in South Africa, but in Australia it just felt all the time. And when you went out at night, it just felt like it was so the whole atmosphere. And I mean, I have a friend and she worked for SOCOC. She worked for the Sydney Olympic Organising Committee. And every year when the Olympic Games comes up, like the anniversary, she's always posting something. And this year she posted 20 years, all these photos, all these great memories. So, and I feel all that. And I saw it all in Australian, in English on the TV. I mean, and I felt the buzz and I talked to other people who were there. And you know, I'm really excited to see the Kathy Freeman thing.
Hey, you know, you've just made me realize with you saying all of that why I've got it wrong in my disappointment, because I think I wanted more of that. I wanted more of the city, the feeling, the Olympics, the party. And that is not what it's about. It's Kathy Freeman's story.
Yes.
So it's more about her and what she'd done to get there and her personal story. So I think probably I was sort of seeking out this, okay, give me a rundown of what we missed where that wasn't it. I mean, she is amazing. And the story itself is incredible because it shows you what she went through, how determined she was. All the stuff about her opponents and where her head had to be to win that race and why everyone collectively sort of held their breath as she came around the bend. So that part of it is good. But, yeah, I think I'm looking for a different story.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a whole – I'm looking for a whole different doco.
But you also didn't get any of that there. So,
that's why
you want to feel it, because you want to feel it in remotely, because you didn't get that feeling.
Get it. That's it. Okay, tell me a couple of your things and I'll come back for my last one.
Oh, okay. So I am watching, I'm watching two TV shows. I'll talk about them both. One is Away on Netflix with Hilary Swank and Josh Charles, who's Will from The Good Wife. I just think there's Will from The Good Wife. Hilary Swank is an astronaut and she is leading the first mission to Mars, and which is a 3-year process. And it is a good American, it's a good solid American drama series, and it's not soapy. Like it's good and solid and it's modern. The leader of the mission is a woman. And there's 5 on the crew and 2 of them are women. The leader of the mission control in the US is a woman, but her second in command is a man. So it's got all this sort of modern narrative around that stuff. It's an international mission, so every astronaut is from a different continent. That's how there's a Russian, a Chinese person, and it examines all these things about how a woman can sometimes have an advantage, but how that's not sometimes seen as a disadvantage, or, you know, if you're looking for it. Otherwise, you can just watch it and enjoy it as a TV show. Anyway, I'm really enjoying it. It's worthwhile. A couple of people were talking about it, and so I flipped it on. The other thing I'm watching is sort of the exact opposite of that, which is a TV show called Duchess, which is also on Netflix. And it is a UK comedy, and it's done by, though, a Canadian comedian living in the UK. Apparently she's not super well-known in Canada, but she's quite well-known in the UK.
Oh, is this the woman that does the stand-up routine about Hamilton? Long blonde
hair? Long blonde hair, yes. I don't know if it's her, but, yeah, could be. I haven't seen
her. What's her name?
Her name, let me Google it. She looks really familiar, but then when I looked at other things she's been in, I couldn't tell where I knew her from. Catherine Ryan, her name is. She has written this. So it's kind of like it's meant to be semi-biographical in a way. And it's like, I wanted to say it's like Fleabag, but don't yell at me, all the people who say it's not like Fleabag. It's not. It's just like a seriously flawed woman who says outrageous and nasty things and her seriously flawed ex-partner. And they're raising this apparently incredibly intelligent, centered child together. But it is just, it's addictive. And I was watching it thinking it's very over the top and I don't think it would play well with a US audience. And I quickly Googled some reviews because it's only been out for sort of a week. And all the North American reviews were very, oh, it's too much. No, it's ridiculous. Blah, blah, blah. And then I found a couple of UK reviews which were like, yeah, it's quite good. It's a bit over the top in some places, but it's, you know, it's smart and it's, you know, clever. And but I just, it's just almost the opposite of a way, which is like a drama. You sit down, you got to really engage and you emotionally, whatever. And this is like, oh, I can't believe she just said that. Oh, no, she said something else. You know, this kind of thing that just, but it's just a bit sort of quirky. And if you're wanting, I mean, it's not like mindless, but it's funny and quirky. And I'm in for it. I'm here for it.
She's funny. Look, I haven't seen Duchess, but I have seen she does a fantastic skit on what the problem with Hamilton is. And she's, you'll know it, Nikki, as soon as you see it, you'll go, oh, I've seen this, where she talks about how she goes to see it on New Year's Eve and how he says, you know, I don't know how to say no to this. And she's shouting back to them going, yes, you should say no to this because it's all about what, you know, you're about to sleep with a child. But I don't know about Duchess, but yeah, go and have a look at it. It's a really, it's a good skit.
Yeah, okay, I will do that. So it's The Duchess. It says, a single mom tries to raise her daughter in London while wondering if she should have another kid, basically. So she's trying to think, if she has another kid, should it be the same father even though she doesn't like him at all? Like, would it be better if they both the kids were from the same father? Like, would it be better for them in the future, for the kids, sort of thing? So all the comedy is kind of based around that situation. Anyway, that's two of my things. And my third thing I'll quickly do before you do your last one was, on the weekend I had a call with a group of girls who I went to Blogger 2013 in Chicago with.
I remember when you went to Blogger 2013.
Yes. Or Blogger, as it's called. And it was amazing. So now
So who's in that group? Are we allowed to say who's in that group out loud? Can we give them a shout out? Sure,
but none of them are really blogging anymore, except one of them, Jules. She does a page in a group called RV Love, and that basically they're full-time RVers, and she and her American husband have done that for 6 years, and they run a YouTube channel and a blog about how to do that.
Oh, wow.
I didn't actually meet all of them at that one, but some of us went that year and some of us went the year after. And so it's a group that we've just put together. We called ourselves the Aussie Posse because I was a late addition. I wasn't involved in the naming, but it was just a lot of Australians who met in the US. And so we don't talk about, although this time we did say we're going to get back together in about a month and we're going to talk about all the sort of good ideas we have for sort of business related online stuff and help each other out. They're all incredibly talented women doing amazing things. So I'm I'm here too. But we were there. We were there and it started at 10 because to have something in Australia, the US and Europe at the same time is really tricky. So it was 10 o'clock p.m. for me and it was 6 a.m. in Australia. So the two girls in Australia got up at 6 o'clock. One of them was walking her dog. The other one's having a cup of coffee. And I went through to 2 a.m. my time. So it's 4 hours.
Wow. That's so good though. Now tell me, when you all got together all those years ago and went to blog her, because I remember seeing you go to blog her because we were all blogging back in those days. And were you thinking then in your mind, I'm going to blog her because I love blogging and I want to keep writing? Or were you thinking, oh, I'm going because I want to start some sort of business? Because I don't think people were really thinking about online businesses so much then. Or were you just going because you wanted to go with a group of friends and you were interested in the people that were talking at blog her?
Well, I knew no one going in, so I went by myself. And I met a couple of people there, Australians that I had met online in advance. They were the Twitter days and the blogging days, as you know. And Sheryl Sandberg was speaking, so that was like a big draw card for me. And it was just one of those things I thought, I'm living in the States. I'm never going to get an opportunity to do this again. I mean, I did a blog and it was a tiny well done in the scheme of things. But I just thought, you know, this is the one opportunity I have to go and do something that I would not necessarily normally get to do. Like, I wouldn't have traveled from Australia or from wherever else I was living to go. Yeah. So I was living in Atlanta. I thought, it's in Chicago. It's not it's not that far. It's not the end of the world. So I went for 4 days and it was amazing. And it was in the, like, the heyday of blogging. And so it was hilarious. You know, and you'd see people, you go, oh my God, you know, that's.
That's Heather Armstrong.
Like all these people. It was just amazing. And there is a photo that we still have with three or four of us that were on this call with Sheryl Sandberg. We all lined up. We all had our photo taken together with Sheryl. Had a little chat with her. And so, yeah.
Because that was pre-leaning, no, that was, wasn't it?
That was pre-leaning, the year of leaning. I think she did it that year. So that's obviously why she was there. Okay. But it was the one time when I realized, and I got there and everyone was up on stage and you think, oh, these are all people who've just, you know, living the American dream, pulled themselves up by their bootstraps, you know, they've done this amazing thing. And I just sat there watching person after person and thinking, oh my God, they all went to Stanford and Harvard and like they all went to Ivy League schools. I was thinking, no, hang on. These people all started like, they didn't all start like all these people sitting on the floor. Like the people on the stage started on the stage. It was just one of those things where I realized we can all be like Mark Zuckerberg's sister spoke and there was all this stuff. And I was like, yeah, okay. Really enjoyed it. And I was totally had drunk the Kool-Aid and I went to all the parties and I did the fun run. I did the 5K run. You know, I've got the photo of the bean before anyone else was there in the morning and all this kind of stuff. So, I mean, and I loved going to Chicago and it was amazing. But it was just great that I 7 years later, we're still meeting up. We just do it like once or twice a year on a Zoom call. We used to do Google Meets before Zoom became popular. But yeah. And it was one of my favorite things this week. It's very good for the soul.
Brilliant. Your two last things. I think that's brilliant. In the Facebook group last week, the Two Fat Expats group, someone asked a question of, so what do you guys all do? I mean, there's 26,000 of us now in that Facebook group. And I loved the different answers that came back because, Nikki, I would say that 20 years ago we would have not had the wide range of answers that we'd had and we would have had a lot more people that would have said, oh, I moved because my husband did this and so I went da da da. Well, there was barely any of that this time around. There was a lot of I've changed careers or I've done this or I've done that and this is what I'm doing now and this is how I'm doing it. And it was really, really inspiring, actually. I found it very inspiring of when you looked at people and went, wow, the world has changed and expat women have moved with those changes and now have so many more opportunities than they would have had 20 years ago. But one of the suggestions that I really loved was a woman called Courtney, and I'm guessing her surname might be Thompson. It's her Facebook name is Courtney Tomo, and she, or maybe it's Tomo, and I've just decided to change her name for her right there and then. But anyway, Courtney had talked about how she'd learned the hard way that she had to diversify her skills because as one income stream dries up, she has to kind of find another one to fall back on. And she talked about all the different things she'd done, and it could have been anything from being, you know, using her psychology degree to working in event management to then becoming a swimming instructor, et cetera, et cetera. But she suggested a book called Range, and it's written by a guy called David Epstein. And I have downloaded it because it sounds good. And she'd said that it was on her reading list and she thought maybe the poster might have enjoyed it as well. But can you remember, Nikki, when Malcolm Gladwell came out with Outliers, there was that idea that 10,000 hours and that's all it took to become a specialist in your area. And this is kind of dispelling that myth of going back to, well, no, it's generalist v specialist. And because of that, I thought he was very clever that he has a Malcolm Gladwell endorsement on the cover of his book saying, you know, this is making me rethink it. And so I will report back on that, but I just thought if anyone else is sort of thinking about what they're doing or whatever it might be a good suggestion. So it's called Range, and it's Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. I think it came out in about May of 2019, David Epstein, and it looks good.
Perfect. It sounds amazing. All right. Well, good chat. Thumbs up now. I see we start in the dark when I'm here in Hamburg, and then we end in the sunshine. So good chat. And I'll look out for your LinkedIn updates.
Thank you. And, yeah, you just keep me posted if you think of something that you're going to do this week for your habit changing.
I'll put it on the ground. Actually, I have thought of something. I have thought of something.
Oh, tell.
I am working on a separate project that I – it's also a passion project that I do outside my other passion project of Two Fat Expats and my expat kids learning differently site. And I'm doing some interviews there. So we the group has talked about things that they'd like to know more about. So I'm going to schedule some interviews and talk to people about – things that we want to learn more about in that group and to be able to share it there and perhaps share it, you know, in other places. So I'm going to – that's my plan to get updated on that.
All right. Okay, Nikki. Okay. I will speak to you next week and good luck interviewing and doing interesting things.
Bye.
Bye.